Hello, my name's Graham Stretch. I'm the president of the PCPA. What we've decided to do during COVID is we need to move our offerings for members online into virtual form. So we've done a series of webinars. We've been releasing materials to assist members in this pandemic. And actually now we're going to look at producing some podcasts. The first of which will focus on the importance of identifying and managing patients who have malnutrition, and particular reference to the management of those patients during the COVID pandemic. Nutrition's not necessarily something that goes to the front of pharmacists' minds when they're looking at patients, and they're generally considering how medication might affect their overall health. But actually, in terms of quality of life, it's vital. And I think when we overlook it, we very often overlook something fundamental to our patients' well-being. So I'm delighted to introduce the two guests that we have for this first podcast. The first is Anne Holdaway, who's a consultant dietitian and is chair of the malnutrition pathway. And she can introduce herself and tell us a little bit more about that.
Thank you, Graham. Yeah, so I'm Anne Holdaway. I'm a consultant dietitian based in the southwest of England, but work now on a number of national projects. And a particular passion of mine is around managing malnutrition in the community, particularly our older population and those with chronic disease. And I've been chairing the malnutrition pathway consensus panel since 2011, when it was recognised that members of the healthcare team, including pharmacists, needed information at their fingertips to help support patients with dietary issues and those particularly at risk of malnutrition. And the range of resources that are now available include some resources specifically designed to support pharmacists in practice. And all of those resources can be found at www.malnutritionpathway.co.uk.
And Sam?
My name's Samantha Cudby. I'm a practice pharmacist working for a GP surgery in Addlesden in Surrey. I've worked in community pharmacy and in the CCG. My main focus has always been care of the older person, and I have particular affiliations with residents in residential homes and nursing homes.
Thank you. Care home work, of course, is very close to my heart. I read figures. I read figures that talk about something like 3 million people in the UK are at risk of malnutrition. And actually, in the older, frailer patients, it's one in six of those individuals. So just thinking in a broadest sense, what do we mean by the term malnutrition?
Well, if I can take that question, Graham. So what we mean by malnutrition, and a definition that's often used is that by Professor Marinos Ilya in the Bapenmus report, and that is that malnutrition is a state of nutrition in which deficiency or excess or imbalance of energy, protein and other essential nutrients causes measurable adverse effects on our body form, our tissue function and clinical outcomes. And many people think, you know, obesity is a significant health problem, and malnutrition isn't. But malnutrition is a big problem, and as you say, affects up to 3 million people at any one time in the UK. And about 1.6 million of those are people who are older. So they're particularly vulnerable to malnutrition, and in terms of clinical outcomes and function, it can really impact on their quality of life and affect things like hospital admissions and their susceptibility to infection. And we know that's been particularly important through the COVID-19 pandemic and ensuring that we protect these vulnerable individuals who may be at risk of malnutrition and in their own homes or in care homes.
Thank you, Anne. Sam, thinking about malnutrition, why is it relevant to pharmacists working in primary care?
I would say primary care pharmacists, we're in a unique position to manage our patients' medication, ensure they're not only just taking the medication as we think they are, but that it's still indicated and they're still getting some benefit from it. This remains the same, you know, in these times as it always has been, even though we're working differently now. We're always considering what's important to the patient. And when we're discussing the issues and the side effects, it seems to me it's a natural step to consider the impact on a patient's appetite and their well-being. malnutrition causes all sorts of complications for our patients, and managing these becomes essential to achieving the positive outcome that we really want. Loads of national and local guidance out there now. Some of it's been newly written for the pandemic, and it is absolutely fabulous. And it means that as pharmacists, we can work within our own competence and still feel confident about, what we can do when we need to involve clinicians within the practice, and then when we need to refer to specialist advice.
Yes. I mean, drilling down on that point, really, and actually, how does malnutrition actually affect our patients? What does it do to them?
Well, Graham, what we tend to see in everyday practice is that as somebody becomes malnourished, they might become depressed and withdrawn. If they're sitting around or maybe in a hospital bed or in bed much of the time in a care home, then they might be prone to pressure ulcers developing and they don't heal particularly well. They're going to be susceptible to infections. So we know that a poor nutritional intake will mean that they don't get the nutrients to really maintain their immunity. So they will be more prone to an infection such as COVID-19. And if they do become unwell and are unfortunate to need a hospital admission, then we know that the malnutrition will increase their length of stay and also increase the likelihood of them being readmitted once they've come out. So we get this sort of revolving door where we get them home, they're still undernourished, we don't look after their nutrition, and several weeks later they bounce back into hospital again. And I'm sure that any older person would tell you that perhaps hospital is the last place they want to be, and certainly the last place that people want to be, you know, when there's a COVID pandemic and we're trying to keep them safe.
Sam, do you have anything to add?
Well, I was just going to say it's quite often the time you hear patients say, I just give up. You know, they really lose the will to do anything more. And that's the point when you feel you've got to do more for them. And as pharmacists, we're quite often targeted. We're quite often, we have often to show what we're doing, and reducing hospital admissions is one of the key ones that we often set. So this is a really big area where we can help to reduce hospital admissions.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. And I think very often pharmacists just aren't aware. So imagine I'm working. How am I going to, day-to-day practice, how am I going to assess malnutrition? And how does my practice need to change, really, actually, in light of a lot of the work we're doing now remotely? So how am I going to assess it, and how am I going to do that if I'm working via video, for example?
Okay, well, under normal circumstances, a lot of care homes and a lot of general practices, a lot of the healthcare team will be using something like MUST, which is the Malnutrition Universal Screening Tool that was developed and validated by BAPN for healthcare practitioners to very quickly screen somebody for the risk of malnutrition. But, the way that we're working at the moment is very different. And so the malnutrition pathway, which Sam sort of alluded to earlier, around some resources that have been developed to help deal with identifying malnutrition in the current circumstances, have utilised new tools such as a malnutrition self-screening tool, or if you're actually on the phone to patients, then the Patients Association checklist or BAPN, a series of questions have been developed so that you can ask questions to your residents, perhaps on a call or on a video call and in a virtual consultation, how their appetite is, has it changed, have they noticed that their clothing or their jewellery has become loose, have they noticed that they're eating far less than normal, are they concerned about their weight themselves, particularly losing it unintentionally, and some of those questions to start to give you an idea as to whether they're at risk of malnutrition, and whether you then go on to actually provide advice about how they might improve their eating and drinking, particularly during this pandemic where they might be quite isolated as well.
So Sam, different GP pharmacists, different PCN pharmacists have a range of different special interests and specialist areas. But I think, nutrition is not a very common one. And I'm just wondering, how do you fit that in with your day-to-day work as a GP pharmacist?
I've always just done it. It's always just been part of the consultation. Whenever a patient comes in to see me, they are always weighed, their height is always measured, and that naturally leads on to the conversation. How is your appetite? Are you able to finish any meals? Leads on to, you know, do you have any swallowing issues, which opens up other pathways. It's just part of the conversation that I have during a day-to-day clinic.
I think that's such an interesting observation, and it's something that I think many of us wish, just perhaps don't even consider, that we could absolutely bring into our day-to-day practice. Thank you. Pharmacists love tools, and I think that, you know, having reference to tools can really help to guide them through these consultations. Once we've used those tools and identified those patients that might be at risk of malnutrition, do you think pharmacists should be immediately referring them to a dietitian to talk about diet and the oral nutritional supplement prescriptions, or is it something that we can do more actually as a pharmacist in the first instance?
Well, if I can answer that first, and I'm sure Sam will have something to say as well on this. My views as a dietitian and very long standing in this clinical field is that there just aren't enough dietitians. We've got probably around 7,000 dietitians for the entire United Kingdom in practice, and some of those will be part-time. So if you think we're dealing with 3 million people at risk of malnutrition who perhaps need dietary advice and support, along with all the other patients who have diabetes, cardiovascular disease, inflammatory bowel disease, who also need dietary advice, then there's no way that dietitians can meet the needs of all these patients in one-to-one consultations. So I've always been an avid fan of encouraging the other members of the multidisciplinary team, including pharmacists, to engage with the nutrition agenda and just begin by having that nutrition conversation, particularly if you're doing polypharmacy reviews and you start asking about appetite and unintentional weight loss. You can glean an awful lot of information from that. And then we've got resources that are designed for the allied healthcare professionals in the team and designed for pharmacists to use in practice to help give first line advice for patients and their carers, and also guide them about the use of oral nutritional supplements in perhaps a patient who might be at high risk of malnutrition. So that would be my views. I'm sure Sam has something to offer as well there.
And I don't think there's an easy answer to when we should refer. I think it depends very much on the patient and what they want and what their needs are. And I think right at this moment, I think it's really important. We request support when it's needed, but we don't offload the problem to someone else. So we need to do our bit before we think of asking a dietitian in. We need to have asked the questions and seen what we can do. Had a patient just recently who wasn't eating and was losing weight, and it turned out that the reason they weren't eating was because they'd hurt their shoulder and couldn't feed themselves anymore. So that, if I'd referred to a dietitian at that point, that would have been a real wasted time, because I could solve it. So I think it's about what you need to do and where we feel confident in doing that and leading that forward.
And I think that's a very valid point that Sam's made around, you know, having those conversations and identifying some issues that you can actually influence or signpost on or refer on for other help within the healthcare team or social care as well. But then when you're faced with a patient with perhaps a number of health conditions and you're unsure about which direction to go in, then I think that's where dietitians come into their own and can take into account a number of conditions and start providing the advice. And that sometimes is actually through the healthcare team, so it may not be the dietitian having a phone call with the patient themselves, but actually giving some advice to the pharmacist who's got a lot of that information that they've sought out from their conversation with the patient.
It is very much about collaborative working. It's about bringing the different skill sets into the mixture.
Yeah, I think so. I think for me, there's a halfway house here, which is where the pharmacist reaches out to the dietitian and gets some advice so that they can indeed action it, and if necessary, then refer on. So there's that halfway, just swap mobile numbers with your dietetic department so that, you know, when you've got problems, you can get in touch with somebody, invite them to join a call, or in our new world, even a video MDT. It seems to me that dietetics need to be intimately involved in those multidisciplinary teams, particularly in care homes. And I'll tell all of our trainees that the most important thing is communication between the various healthcare professionals, so that when we need dietitians, they have the time, because if we overload them, simply there won't be enough, as you say, and to go around. So it seems to me a 5-minute phone call with a dietitian might well give us an opportunity to make those interventions without actually them needing to come out. But then they'll be available when we do need them if we work in that way.
So yeah, I think Graham as well on that front. You know, there are posts now of dietitians working in the community who are actually allocated to oversee a number of care homes, and those sort of services are now being commissioned, and you know, can work very closely with the pharmacist in those situations and really reduce the burden of work on the GP. So work as a pharmacist in collaboration with the dietitian to really put policies in place and manage from that sort of top down across a number of care homes and be really effective and efficient in doing so.
Doubtless. And one of the things that's happened in Ealing, even though we're a little bit nervous about it, is that Ealing Partners have effectively got a contract where all of the community services are all under one umbrella now, which means that dietetics, but also SALT and also things like TVN, are all in the same organisation. And that really has helped us to start thinking about how we can work in a more cohesive way for patients. So thinking about patients at the point where they're discharged from hospital, imagine they're coming out of hospital and they come out on their oral nutritional supplements. Sam, what kind of problems might you face?
This remains one of our biggest problems. If they are discharged from hospital without any dietetic advice or any input, so there's no goals and no end game, we then have to take over and do the reviews for weight measurement, and to actually then go back and understand why the patient was put on the supplement in the first place. Any other medication, we wouldn't continue without a clear indication. And so we need to have the clear indication for any supplement that they're discharged from hospital for, and make sure that it's the right one for them, they're taking it properly, that it's of benefit, and that, you know, we know what we're trying to achieve with it. It's not meant to be a replacement for their breakfast and their lunch. It's meant to be an add-on to, you know, to make them feel better.
Absolutely. I can remember an incident a few years ago now where a patient had sadly passed away and had left a big tote full of an oral nutritional supplement. And the nurses, with the best intentions, had decided they would make quite good starters for the rest of their patients, whether or not their diabetes or whatever it was. And I remember being utterly horrified by this and having to explain that we should be treating these ONS as actually like a prescribed medicine, because that's exactly what they are. They're tailored, they're bespoke for our patients. I think in my mind, it's more than just ONS, of course. And so I wonder, why are we giving dietary advice to some patients and on the other hand, other patients going straight in with ONS?
I think the answer to that would be it all depends on the risk of malnutrition, and something like the MUST tool, which assesses risk, will give you various scores, you know, one being medium risk and two or more being high risk. So that's all based on the percentage of weight loss over time that an individual might have experienced, and you're sometimes having to do that from recall. So if they're medium risk, then in those situations you would perhaps start looking at diet and giving them some initial dietary advice, and the malnutrition pathway has those resources, so pharmacists can print them off or email them to a care home or email them to patients. And then if they're not responding to that initial dietary advice, you might then progress onto oral nutritional supplements if they're still losing weight, for example. And then if they're high risk, there is good quality evidence showing that if a patient's at high risk, it's cost effective in those cases, particularly if you're picking up that their appetite's very poor or they're missing out on protein at mealtimes, then you might be looking at providing an oral nutritional supplement which provides balanced nutrition in a very easy to digest form that's giving them protein and vitamins and minerals. And I so often see patients, you know, they might be prescribed, you know, 60 bottles of a vanilla supplement. And I think that's where, as pharmacists, that conversation with the patient about, is the supplement the right flavour? Is it a compact, low volume one? Those discussions, I see no reason why a pharmacist can't have those discussions and sometimes tailor the prescription so that the patient's more likely to comply to it. And then the important thing is that you're monitoring the compliance to the supplement. Is it the right one? Are they able to take it? And is it achieving the goals? And rather just focus on weight, which we'd often done in the past. It might be how the patient's feeling. Do they seem to have a little bit more energy? Are their activities of daily living improving? So some of those are very subjective at times, but I think they're really valuable. And we tend to see outcome measures that reflect function or improved function as a result of an improvement in nutritional intake before sometimes we register a difference on the scales. So I think that's important to note.
And Sam?
We can ensure as pharmacists that they are prescribed properly. So if they are meant to be taken twice a day, we've got that on the label so that they are taken twice a day and the patient doesn't feel that, you know, they shouldn't, you know, take one a day. They wouldn't ever only take half their medicines a day. So why do they feel that, you know, they should just only take one of their supplements a day? It's getting that message across.
Yeah, I think so.
And sometimes, you know, they're prescribed supplements in hospital and they're coming home on them because we know their appetite's been really poor. And nobody's ever explained to them why they're on it, you know, why their nutrition is important. So a lot of what my role as a dietitian is about educating them on the value of nutrition, that it can make a difference to their well-being and how they might see the difference themselves. And then you're educating the patient on the value of it. And then that also helps compliance as well.
And I love, because we prescribe them acutely, it means that we have to review them every month. And that's at the moment, a phone call, you know, to the patient. And that's a check for them. We can, you know, yes, we're asking about whether they want some more of their oral nutritional supplements, but we can also ask how they are, how they're getting on with everything else. I mean, I think it's a really good point of contact.
Yeah, I think it's got to be an iterative process, because as patients get their appetite, they may get sick of one, they may decide they don't like it, they may have put it to one side and not told you. We've got to review it, because actually over time their appetite will change, and it might be they no longer need it might be it's actually not doing the job. And unless we review it in that way, I don't actually think we're really doing our job. I mean, most recently I can remember a TVN having a fairly long conversation with one of my patients I could overhear, and actually she was talking about her wound healing, just not, it's this wound is simply not going to heal unless we can get your nutrition right. So it is definitely the case that having dietetics at the MDT helps the rest of us to give due consideration to these important points. I think that probably then brings us to the end of our first podcast. So thank you to Sam and Am. That was very interesting. And I think that it's good to hear how pharmacists and dietitians work together, and this idea of the MDT, so we can both inform each other's thinking for the well-being of our patients, and that make sure that malnutrition is indeed identified and treated appropriately in the community. So look out for our next podcast. So in this one, it will be much more case-based. We'll be discussing two case histories of patients in the community and how a primary care pharmacist working in conjunction with their dietetic department can really make a difference to patients' outcomes. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.